February 14th, 2007. It's the Lot from Pedro Show.
Thank you. Charge the power in the wood.
Thank you.
The power in the ooze. Touch wood.
We started off with I Want to Talk About You, John Coltrane, live in Newport, 1963, and then Touch Wood by Migu. Now, Brother Matt's all jammed up, so I'm all by myself here in my pad in Pedro, but I got some help with this show. First, an interview from last week with Thurston Moore, and then third hour, something new to the show, a segment from a friend of mine in England, so... First Thurston here. Oh yeah, it's Valentine's Day, so let me say Happy Valentine to everyone. Here's Thurston.
Go for it.
Okay, I got one of these sucker
MCs,
suction cup mics on the phone.
Oh yeah, that's I'm doing something like that right now. I'm sort of transferring this this woman's cassette tapes to digital by just sending them to my computer and grabbing them with the CD spin doctor.
Oh.
So she has all these old cassettes from 78. Like, she's a teenager living in New York, and she used to sort of tape gigs. Man, good stuff, too. Like, total out-of-control contortions gigs and Johnny the Heartbreakers. And now I'm listening to one where it's her, like, having a conversation with Byron in 1978.
In New York City?
Yeah, you can hear Byron's voice. It sounds like a kid. He's talking about, like, watching The Odd Couple and stuff like that.
I remember meeting him in the early 80s. He moved out here. Is that Heartbreakers with Richard Hale?
No, it's not that early.
So it's Billy Raff?
Yeah.
He's good.
Billy Raff.
I wonder what he's doing now.
But it's the best thing is about what's like the between song stuff. It's great.
Oh, the banner?
Yeah, it's really bullish.
She just turned it on and kept it going?
Yeah. You can't wait to leave.
Oh, you mean Johnny Thunders?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got stations on the cross. Him and Walter.
All right.
Waldo. Dueling. Okay. Let's talk about the... All Tomorrow's Parties. What was that like for you? You curated.
Well, you know, All Tomorrow's Parties, you know what it is, right? It's sort of like this guy in England who decided to do this festival once or twice a year where he would ask a artist to curate it. So he'd ask a different band or a different musician or whatever to sort of pick all the bands. And then he'd go out and get them, you know? So it was kind of a cool thing. It's like, it's sort of like a living mixtape in a way, almost. And, he had, you know, Sonic Youth did the first one we did when we did it in UCLA campus, and the first one in the U.S. He had us curate it at UCLA, and that was a blast. I mean, that was years ago.
That's
we did another one. Like, we did another one before or after that, or both. I mean, in England, and he would sort of rent out this off-season beach resort because you would do it in December. And so you'd have this whole sort of classic UK kind of beach resort where there would be chalets that people could stay in, and there would be sort of, you know, bumper car rides and these huge bingo parlors and stuff that had all kinds of games in them. And it was kind of a blast. This one we just did, I asked him if I could just do one myself, because I really just didn't want to sort of have to do it as a democratic thing anymore. Like, you know, what bands do you want? What bands do you want? Are you okay with this band I'm choosing? Blah blah blah. Which is I don't mind, but I sort of wanted to sort of have the whole enchilada, and so I asked him if I could just do one solo myself, picking all the bands, and he let me. So, you know, it was totally cool. It was at a new place in England, a different beach off-season beach resort.
I was told they were holiday camps.
Holiday camps. I guess that's what I mean. They're holiday camps. Yeah.
You know that one at UCLA? Did you pick the Stooges? Because that was the first time we played with Scotty.
Well, yeah, I mean, it wasn't even the Stooges. It was called Ashton, Ashton, Maskus, and Watt.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And, you know, that was sort of that... Yeah, that was the first time Scott played and in that lineup. But, you know, that lineup was sort of like in this... It was sort of in this development at the time when, you know, it was one thing leading to another, you know. I mean, it all started when we... When Ron sort of connected with us doing music for Todd Haynes' Velvet Goldmine movie. And they wanted Stooges songs. And it was like, well, let's do them with Ron. That was, to me, was, you know, Jim Dunbar was sort of a music consultant for the film to some degree. He was an advisor. And Don Fleming was involved. So it was basically, we just sort of reached out to, you know, our friends to play with Ron, who we knew would be into it. Which meant you on bass, meant, you know, we got Shelley on drums, and me and Fleming on guitars, and Ashton, certainly on guitar, lead guitar, and he showed us the songs, which, yeah, everybody knows how to play Stooges songs, but nobody really knows how to play them the way Ron plays them, and that was, to me, was the most enlightening thing. It's like, all of a sudden, sitting across from Ron, showing the chords that I knew, but he showed me how he played them, and there was this real sort of subtle swing, and that was real distinct. It was real genuine to him. It was like, okay, anybody can play Stooges songs, but nobody can play them like this guy. I mean, this. So to me, it was like all of a sudden I was privy to the blueprint, and that was completely amazing for me. And so I think Ron sort of recognized that we were all sort of like there as students, you know, and as students and aficionados, but, you know, we weren't just sort of session musicians, like, you know, having some movie soundtrack gig. And everybody sort of got on. I think, and we had different singers. We didn't know what was going to go on, so, you know, I sang a song. You sang a song. You even brought in a song. And
Pull on the Pipe.
Niagara, you know, his friend Niagara, you know, wrote a song. And we brought Mark Arm in to sing a lot of the songs. I think Sean Lennon got involved and did something. And so there's all this material got generated, and even Ron sang a song.
That's right, Ron.
You know, and he said it was like that was the first time I was ever asked to sing, because I used to sing in choir, and that was really fascinating when he sang, because he sort of tapped into this kind of like real primal, old school American rock and roll thing. Like he had sort of a Jerry Lee Lewis kind of take on it, which I remember, like, me and Fleming were kind of high-fiving each other, like, when he did his take, like, yeah, this guy's kind of real deal. And this is kind of cool. And so I think Ron sort of got so interested in the fact that, you know, there's people like us who are really into the virtue of, like, the Stooges music. And I think... What happened after that? I mean, it's like all of a sudden, I mean, Maskus got involved.
Wild Rats, that thing was called. Who named that?
Wild Rats, the name Wild Rats came from, I think, Fleming and Jim Dunbar, because I think the name of Mick Ronson's band before Spiders of Mars was...
Rats.
The Rats or something. And so it was a play on that, since the movie was dealing with the Bowie Iggy thing, and so there's that, and the Wild Rats. I don't know, and we spelled it with like W Y L D D E and R A T T Z or something like that. Totally.
Well, I can help you with the Maskus thing.
How did Maskus come in? Because you started playing with Maskus and his group.
Well, that sickness, right?
And then you got really sick.
Right. Well, this is before that.
Wait a minute. Were you sick before this... were you sick before or after the movie session?
The Wild Rats, the movie stuff was, I think, in 97.
Right.
And I got sick in 2000.
Okay.
And almost died, and I couldn't play bass. They had tubes in me. And so when I went, I healed up enough to play again. I hadn't stopped since I was 13. So then I was lame. I couldn't, had no rhythm, no strength, no dexterity, all atrophied. So I started playing Stooges songs to get strong. And I put together a cover band.
Mm-hmm.
With the two other porno guys, Perkins and Peter, Porno for Pyros. And then I asked Jay and Murph to do some gigs on the East Coast with me at Brownies and Shittin' Factory. And Jay had just done this thing called Jay Maskus in the Fog, and he wanted to tour and asked me. And I thought the best way to get strong was just jump on the horse. So I went with him, and he told me, it's hard for him to sing every night, so why don't you do some Stooges songs? I said, yeah.
Right.
Even a Black Fly, I think I've had it. Well, we get to Ann Arbor, and he goes, you know Ronnie, why don't you call him up? So we're at the Blind Pig, and he comes on down. Jay goes, well, first you rip off a guy, and then you play with him. And then he asked him to come to England, and New York City at the Wetlands. We're playing with them, but it was you that got Scotty on board instead of George Burrs for that ATP thing.
Yeah, but I forget how Scotty entered into it, though.
He didn't even have a drum set. He was living in his camper.
All right. I asked Ron. I mean, I think I talked to Ron on the phone. He was like, yeah, Scotty would love to play, or, I can get Scotty to play. I was like, that would be it. We have to do that. So, I think that's sort of what happened.
Now, this one in December, you picked all the bands.
This one in December, I picked all the bands, and, that was pretty much it. Stooges. I always asked for the Stooges. They're like the best band, right? I mean, so you have to ask for the Stooges.
Slipper.
Plus, they were into it. They're like, man, if you get the Stooges, they'll be really great for, we need to get some really, big bands and all this kind of stuff. And, I don't really care, what a band profile is as far as, sales, ticket sales or whatever. But I understand that if you want to make this thing work, you got to get people to come.
At the same time, though, you got deep knowledge of music, so you had a lot of bands, probably not as big.
Most of them weren't.
Right, but very
interesting. Big bands were like you guys, the Melvins, Gang of Four, MC5, I don't know, Deerhoof, I don't know. I mean, and then I got
Flipper.
Flipper.
Bruce Luce just wrote me.
Yeah.
He's got to have back surgery, he said.
Oh, bummer.
Do you like him with Novoselic?
Yeah, but I only saw a little bit of it.
I didn't get to see him at
a
all.
A lot of things I just saw a little bit of because, I'm running around and sort of like trying to deal with everything that was going on. But, I saw a lot, but saw a little of a lot. I had a blast, what can I tell you? And then, the whole thing is like they put us in these chalets and then everybody is sort of like sleeping in these chalets. And, one or two of these chalets would become the party chalet. And so, it would be like 600 dudes crammed into one place, just like drinking beers and passing the pipe. And
did you get Baracho?
No.
Did you ever throw a chair?
No. Well, not then.
After your, after when I was coming.
After a gig?
To call
get
them
off
chalet.
Stage, throw a chair?
No, it was like outside your chalet. It's funny calling them that.
That's what they are, man. That's what they call them.
Somebody was telling me you were throwing stuff and getting rowdy.
I was?
Yeah.
No. I was in my chalet with Kim and John Sinclair.
Oh, yeah. I saw you and John.
And Sinclair stayed in our place, and we lied in bed smelling the smoke of John Sinclair coming out of the front room and then listening to the madness and the chaos that was happening at these parties in these chalets. No, I played it safe when I was there.
Oh, what were you smelling? Mota?
Yeah.
So you're going to do some gigs next week at Sonic Youth?
Hell yeah.
Think Valentine's Day?
We're starting, we're doing like a benefit for Coco's school that she goes to, which is a really good sort of progressive school called Greenfield Center School in Greenfield, Massachusetts. And, you know, they sort of depend on money from, private individuals. So, we did this once before a couple of years ago, so we're doing it again. We're going to play with this band that I like called Wooden Wand and a band called Awesome Color. Both bands have done record. Oh, I've done a record with Awesome Color, and then I'm putting a record out by Wooden Wand on my label, Kinetic Peace. And so we're doing that show Wednesday, and then we sort of do. We do like I think we're doing like New Haven, Boston, New York. We're doing some show up in Burlington, and then we fly down and do two shows in Mexico, one in Guadalajara, and one in Mexico City. Then we book home. And then I'm sort of working on recording solo joint stuff here with some like local dudes. So I'll do that with John and Yellow, who kind of worked with us on Rather Ripped, and we'll do it up at Maskus's place. Maskus is coming here this weekend to shoot a video for a song off his new Dinosaur Jr. record. Matt Dillon is directing it. Matt Dillon and his crew are coming up here, and they're going to take over our basement. Shoot Dinosaur Jr.
In your pad.
Yeah. Totally, man.
I've been in that basement.
Yeah. They're shooting down there.
You gotta turn one part of it into a prac pad.
Yeah, we're pracking down there.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. Well, I am. the band sort of does it sometimes, too. I go, because Kim and I can't go down to New York all the time.
Right.
Yeah, so.
What about Ecstatic Peace? I remember, when did you start that? A long time ago, huh?
Ecstatic Peace, I started that like in the early 80s when I was living in New York, and I wanted to sort of, I always sort of wanted to like put records out. I mean, I wanted to be in a band, I wanted to sort of put records out, make books. So I sort of just like wanted to do everything. Just wanted to be anything that was sort of like kind of about creative expression. I mean, to me, there was like, I never sort of like the whole idea of like, you do what you do, and you do that, and you don't do anything else kind of thing. I don't know. You're a guitar player, you play guitar. It's like, fuck that. I'll play tuba, play drums, I'll play it all. But, I focus on guitar. If I do anything better than anything else, I guess that. But I always like, being in New York, there was a history of that anyway. I mean, that was like, having sort of interdisciplinary kind of activities is sort of, that was sort of really sort of historical there, I mean, it's historical anywhere, like the sort of postmodern world, but I really sort of embraced that, I mean, I was just like, I really liked the scene in New York when I moved there where people were playing not only in clubs, but in like people's apartments and loft spaces and galleries. And there was like the art world was very sort of, on top of the music world because everybody lived in the same neighborhood, so it wasn't, there was no real separation there so much, and so there was a lot of sort of shared aesthetic, And
Paul Rossler said the Screamers played Aloft. Did you see that game?
No, I missed the Screamers in the era. They played CBGB too, because there's a flyer that I've seen that the Screamers at CBGB, but at that time, like, if the Screamers had come that early, like, nobody knew about them in New York unless you were sort of like, you sort of knew, I mean, if you knew Tomata, because he was like an artist, and so some artists knew him, kind of thing, like, and they would go see his band. But they also played this, I remember hearing about them playing at this one place, and it's like, the Screamers, but nobody was really sort of dealing with like what was coming from the West Coast so much. And it was just like, I don't know why. I mean, even X came, played really early on before their album, and it's like, I think they played at Max's Kansas City or whatever. But, the focus at that time was either, like, on your own hood in New York or London, And so everything else was just kind of like, nobody really gave it any value yet. That's certainly changed. It certainly changed when, like, hardcore happened. And even before that, like, when, it changed, like, when bands like I know when the Dead Kennedys came out, they sort of were making kind of a lot of leeway and started getting people to sort of do stuff and, or figure out what was going on in the West Coast. And then, you know, you had the magazines, which were sort of intriguing. You know, you see like Flipside, Slash, and Search and Destroy. You know, Search and Destroy was really interesting because it was sort of like it had a real sort of art world kind of input. You know, there's like always pieces on, you know, Bruce Conner or William Burroughs. And stuff.
What about No Magazine?
No Magazine, that was a little more subterranean, even still. But I mean, I remember it. You know, Mike Girosser was one of the editors of that when he was at school there.
And Minutemen had their first picture in it.
Oh, really?
But they were a lot about art too.
Yeah, well, they were art
pictures.
Students. They were art students.
There was a lot of art students in the old punk days.
Well, because they were of that age, and that was like where, you know, that was where the creative energy was. That was like, you know, I mean, Mike Giroir told me like he was an art student with long hair, and he went to like the Elks Lodge gig, you know, and he was like being up close with his camera, like trying to shoot, and he said that Margot from the Go-Go's was like pulling his ponytail. And he turned around and she's just like looking at him like, cut your hair, hippie. And he said like he felt like that was, you know,
you're talking about the middle class.
Yeah. But he said that was the most significant, you know, it was a catalytic.
I was at that gig, the cops came, it was a bad scene. They cracked the singer's head, the girlfriend's head open with a stick on the steps.
Yeah, we didn't have any of that out here. We didn't have cops coming and beating people up. We had fire marshals coming and closing down CBGBs because Jimmy Carter was like, was kind of supposedly.
What about that Pat Bad Brains used
to
play?
Shut down punk rock because it was a subversive element in youth culture.
A7 or something? Wasn't that a
hardcore? A7, yeah. That was like where the first like hardcore band started playing, like in the like 80, 79, 80, 81. It was like just this pad. It was sort of run. It was sort of a hippie. It was more like a hippie vibe in a way. But then, like, that was where bands like the really little kids who were, you know, the first record they ever heard was Dead Kennedys, as opposed to, you know, people our age who sort of, you know, we were like 18 when punk rock started. So,
yeah.
You know, we already had this history, and we were able to sort of dispose of the history and like, you know, totally grab this new ID. You know, it was fantastic. But all of a sudden, there was all these kids like they didn't have any history. All they had was sort of like, you know, they're 10 years old and they're just like listening to Dead Kennedys. That was like day one for them. That was always really interesting to me. That really sort of set hardcore apart. Like the information was more pure, more raw or something. You know, it's just really just, you're so young. So A7 kind of catered to that. And I know, I remember going there a few times, but I didn't really had that much interest in that stuff at that time because it sort of seemed like, you know, we already sort of went through this, you know, now we were getting into sort of this territory that was kind of getting more interesting with Public Image and Raincoats and Slits.
No Wave?
You know, No Wave certainly, you know. Well, No Wave was pretty much kind of imploding at that point. It was pretty much over with. And there was bands that were coming out of that were still, I mean, DNA were still around. They were still really interesting and, you know, Contortions people, you know, Pat Place started a band called the Bush Tetras, you know, who for their first year or so were, you know, completely great, you know, they were just awesome. You know, Lydia started doing Eight-Eyed Spy, and they were like more sort of like experimental musical things.
ESG.
Yeah, ESG, yeah. But hardcore was something else entirely, you know, it was like it was something really set apart. But I started getting into it when I started seeing the records at this place called the Rat Cage, which was sort of connected to A7 to some degree. And these kids started making records, and I just thought they looked really good because they were just sort of so cheap. You know, the Xerox sleeves. Econo Xerox sleeves folded in half with, like, you know, 20 songs on a 7-inch. And I was like, and I just thought it like had a, there was a certain energy to it that really drew me in. And then I listened to them, and they were almost like, they were amazing because they were like these kind of almost like abstract noise in a way, because there was so primitive and there was no frills.
Did think SST was hardcore?
SST? No, I thought Black Flag was, but SST was interesting because they sort of promoted this concept of real, like, sort of, you know, of localism in a way. And I thought that was pretty fantastic. You know, that it was like, okay, this is our neighborhood, and these are the musicians and artists that are in it. And all the music on SST was kind of like, it wasn't really hardcore, but it was something a bit more sort of here Byron Cullen just walked in.
Was New Alliance a hardcore label?
New Alliance, I don't think of you guys as a hardcore label, even though it was sort of in the context of what was going on with the whole sort of kind of initial kind of hardcore kind of explosion. I mean, SST was sort of stood apart. It was interesting because everybody was so generic, which I kind of liked. I mean, I liked the fact that there was this real sort of similarity in intent and style. Like, you know, this is what you do. You do like this kind of fast thing, you do the skank thing, you do the fast thing, and then you're out of there. And this is how you sing it. You know, this is how things sound, and this is how you play. There's this one sort of like, you know, this real sort of kind of like style and everybody locked into. And I sort of liked that kind of unified vision. I thought that was just a really strong point of the music. And SST, in a way, was sort of always kind of pushing the boundaries without losing the aesthetic. And so by putting records out by Saccharine Trust or the Minutemen or you know, Meat Puppets, you know, even Flag stuff, and I just thought, like, you know, that's really incredible. And the fact that Flag was so instrumental in like, the scene sort of coming together by touring across America and just playing in, you know, every kid's place. I just, you know, for me, it was obvious that the SST was kind of the vanguard label, you know. And then New Alliance was like this kind of, you know, sub-label to it, which we found out was you guys doing it.
Yeah, you told me you wrote us.
Yeah, and I sort of sent, I remember like, okay, if I'm going to send any label anything, I'm going to send it to New Alliance. Because New Alliance, was, you guys were putting out these like compilations that had these like really sort of, this music that was more sort of, in a way, relative to what I was into at the time with, you know, like kind of fractured, kind of no wave art rock moves and stuff. And so you had these complex livers.
Feeble Efforts, Mighty Feeble.
Mighty Feeble, Feeble Efforts, you know, which were kind of like really fascinating because there were like these little moments of like kind of experimental music from like, you know, from like underground LA. So, yeah, I figured, you know, I thought the label, I really liked the aesthetic of the label with the typewriter font that you guys used.
With the typewriter.
Yeah, because everything was written on this one typewriter. Yeah. Like, you know, I just thought there was a certain...
Did I write you back?
Yeah. You wrote me back. You're like, thanks for the records. I know, but we went over there fairly soon to the point where, you know, even right after I did that, you were at one of our first shows there.
Yeah.
Well, we played at I think our first show in L.A. might have been at
the Anti Club.
I don't know.
That's where I talked to you about
Richard Hell.
Yeah.
You were there, I think. Or I went to see. Yeah, you know, I used to go. Actually, I went to see the Minutemen before we even played there because I went out with Kim to visit her folks. And Sonic Youth hadn't been out there yet, but I went out there with Kim. And then I noticed that you guys were playing at a place in on a Pico Boulevard called Music Machine, I think.
Oh yeah.
And I didn't have any money, and so I called up the Music Machine and I said I was a reporter from the New York Times and I was doing a piece on LA clubs, and I would like to come check out your club. Is there anybody playing tonight? And yeah, there's a show tonight. We'll put you on the list. And I said, yeah, we'd like to feature you on this article. And it's like, I'd like to bring my photographer. Is that okay? So I went, and my name was on the list.
Who's the photographer?
Kim. She didn't go. She's like, oh, I don't want to go to that club. But I went, and it was you guys and some band called Megadeth. It wasn't a metal band.
No, it was a joke band of the Plimsolls.
Yeah, it was a fake metal band. They were good. And then it was a
Spinal Tap.
Yeah, Spinal Tap scene. But they were Megadeth before there was a Megadeth.
Right, right.
And and then there was you guys, and
we both broke strings on the first note of the first song.
Yeah, I was just waiting. I mean, I didn't know anybody. I was just sort of like all these like LA people in this club, and I just remember like kind of walking around, just like whatever, but, you know. And then you guys went on, and then I just remember standing and watching you guys, Eddie Brooks string, and then we had to wait, and then Dezo was heckling you guys. And that to me was as entertaining as watching you guys was hearing Dezo, like, you know, can't the fat guy just sort of sing a cappella now? Like that. Have the fat guy sing one. Like, he kept busting these ones. Chops was a madman.
I just saw him in the summer. He's living on your side now. He got married. I saw him with Robo. I hadn't seen Robo in 15 years.
Yeah, Dezo's been around for a while now in New York.
They were both with Jerry Only in the New Misfits.
Yeah. I'm getting to see them.
Some in Milano, Italy, where we played some festival. Is there a difference between the exact piece of those days and the one now?
Yeah. To some degree. I don't know. I mean, there's no difference in what I want the label to do, which is sort of just, you know, put out records that I like. I don't know. But I don't know. I've always sort of had wanted it to be a label that really kind of I don't know what I wanted. I just wanted to put out, you know, I didn't really sort of have too much of a control tower aspect to it. Like, there has to be a certain style here that works, which is like, you know, sometimes that really sort of makes a label stand out. Like, you know, when Sub Pop started doing like this real sort of series of records that had, you know, this one logo and a certain style, and, you know, the subscription series they did, this thing, you know, that was like a great move on their part, you know, really sort of brought attention to them. And
branding.
But I sort of like, to me, you know, a model for it would really be Discord, New Alliance, those kind of labels where it sort of had like this kind of, you know, this real in basement style kind of numbering system, you know. I don't know. I always put like the number symbol on my records, like number, you know, 125B, you know. I only wanted to go up to 100, and then I was gonna go sideways with it instead of, yeah, I was gonna go like I went up to 100, then I started doing like 1B, 2B, 3B, and then C, you know, like I was just gonna. But I strayed. I went outside of 100. I went through different things with the label. I would do it myself, and then, you know, as soon as we got super touring in the 80s, it was just sort of like every once in a while I would do something, and, you know, then I got involved with doing it through Forced Exposure, you know, Jimmy Johnson's label distribution in at Boston, and he did it for a few years, and it would take years just to get shit out, and then things were getting backlogged, because everybody who had asked me to do a record, and if I liked it, I was like, yeah, I want to do it, so I had commitments just piled up. I still do. I have commitments piled up from like the last 5 years. I still need to get these dudes' records out.
Backlog,
man. And I'm sort of catching up. I'm always sort of catching up. I've never really sort of, you know, gotten balanced. And so, you know, I went through different things. But I met this guy here named Andrew Kessen, who lives here in town. And he's sort of a... this dude who used to play in bands that used to tour, in total band tour action in the 80s. He's kind of a design, computer, website design guy. He had a sort of business degree, and he was really into what I was doing and the label. And I said, God, you know, I'd really like to sort of get it to the point, because I get all these dudes sending me records that are like, they're kind of like, they're kind of accessible records. I mean,
Mersh.
Yeah, I mean, but I think they're really good. So, I said, it'd be nice to get like a little seed money to sort of put some of these records out with a distribution deal. And so we went and talked to this dude who's a general manager at Universal Records, this guy Andrew Kronfeld. And he was into it. He said, yeah, you know, let's do it. So last year was the first year, and we just started, we're just getting our legs on this kind of stuff. We put out a few records. But we were able to sort of cut the deal where we can work doing records through them and also do records without them, you know. like
Economy.
Econo Records. So, you know, we do both things. We do major and minor.
Tell me about this solo thing.
Solo gig? Solo record?
You
I'm always wanting to do a solo record.
Well, you did Psychic Hearts how long ago?
Oh, man. I don't
10?
Know, 90-something.
Yeah. 10 years ago.
And that was just, you know, that was real sort of stripped down. I played guitar and bass on it. Steve played drums, and then I had this guy, Tim Foleon. People know his $2 guitar and play like Psychic Guitar on it. Did it 2 days.
Wow.
And, yeah. But yeah, ever since then, every time I get a bunch of songs together, I think, like, I'm going to do a solo joint. It gets time for Sonic Youth to start getting busy. And so I generally will sort of take what I think is kind of the most together stuff and put it into the band. The band always makes it sound, the band does the best things with those songs. You know? Even like these ones I'm writing now for a solo record, I keep thinking, my God, I worked on these with Steve and Lee and Kim right now, they would be really fucking cool. But I still want to do it. I just want to do it. I just like doing it. The idea of doing a solo record. So I'm working with some other dudes. I'm working with this guy, John Maloney, this drummer from Sunburned Hand of the Man.
So it's going to be different than Psychic Cards.
Yeah.
Not yeah. 2 days.
I'm working with this bass player called Mark Eyebald, who's been touring with the last year and a half. After Jim O'Rourke left, we hired Mike Reibold to play bass guitar. So it's kind of cool. That's about it, man. We're not doing too much else. I mean, we're going to go out this summer. We're going to do a bunch of gigs where we play Daydream Nation all the way through.
Oh, wow.
That'll be kind of fun.
Yeah.
We're just going to do this gig, like Daydream Nation gig, where we just come out and we play the entire double album and then get the hell out of there. I think we're going to try it.
Are you going to do for your solo thing song by song, or are you going to do a 2 day?
I'm going to do it in a like a week, I think. I have a block of time coming up in April. I'm going to do it. Or in March.
And then also it'll be out later in the year, maybe.
Yeah, I want to put it out in the fall.
Wow. And Sonic Youth after summer?
We'll probably in the fall, we'll probably like start writing, recording. Shit, but we're not on Geffen Records anymore, so.
Whoa, when did that happen?
The last album was end of the contract.
Yeah,
dude.
Okay.
And then we did this record called The Destroyed Room, which was a collection of like weirdo B-sides and stuff. That was also something that was in our track. We might do one more record with them, but that's just sort of like a collection.
But as far as record new stuff, it's going to be on...
New Alliance. Finally.
Remember the MSR series? Are you still going to do those?
SYR, yeah. We got
SYR,
some SYRs coming out. We're doing some of those.
Those are really interesting.
We're doing those now, and Steve came up with this great idea for the next couple of ones that we're doing, is that all the money that proceeds from those records that we're going to... use is to put into these food programs that sort of feed displaced Iraq civilians. You know, he had this idea, it's like, you know, instead of sending over fucking guns and fucking dudes blowing shit up, why don't we send some food over there for people who fucking need it? So we're going to do that. That was a good idea, I thought.
Yeah. So salute.
Salute to Shelley on that one.
Yeah, right, Steve. And, He's been doing $2 guitar because Tom told me he played bass for him in Paris.
Yeah. Steve just wants to jam, dude. You should have him play with you.
He's
dude likes
the
to
other
play.
Side.
As far as to it.
No, I saw you guys in December. You played after the Stooges. He was smoking.
Who was?
Steve Shelley.
Smoking?
Yeah.
Killer drummer, man.
I've never seen him play. So, I mean, I've always liked him, but man, that really wowed me.
He's the real deal.
In fact, you guys, the whole band was so great. Well, I can't wait to see the Daydream thing. Are you going to play it in order?
Yeah.
What are you doing for Providence?
I never did that before. I mean, nobody, right? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. We used to do that. I mean, not with Daydream, but... I think after in the 90s,
uh-huh.
when we were when we had no bass, and Kim decided to play third guitar, and I was like, okay, you know. And all the low end was like on the kick drum for like 2 years.
Slater Kinney.
And those tours were, you know, those tours were really strange because we were doing records like A Thousand Leaves and Washing Machine,
yeah.
like those records specifically. And we'd write them, we would record them, and then we would go on tour and we would just play those records, you know, in their entirety. And they would be enough to fill a whole set. And then, you know, I kind of was into it in a way. It's like, well, you go see Sonic Youth, and you know, if you're going to hear something you've never heard before.
That's how ELP was when I saw him as a teenager.
ELP?
Album, yeah.
Yeah.
But Daydream.
Well, we're kind of like
a double album,
though, huh?
That's a double album. That's gonna be a long set.
That's gonna be a long fucking set. Well, you know, maybe side four will be the encore. If we get an encore, we get side four.
Are you gonna do Providence?
Hell yeah, man! We should have you come with us. Like, all of a sudden, the light will come on. It'll be you sitting like in this kind of makeshift van seat, you know, like
stage set.
Find your shit. Lay off a motor.
Yeah, what was?
You were hanging around that garbage can. You left them on that garbage can. Oh, that phone booth or something.
What was the scene?
I'm talking to you in this punk phone booth.
Yeah. Well, because remember, you guys would throw the sock out the Elridge window.
Yeah.
You'd have to call on the punk phone. What was the scene that germinated in your head about that, to do that?
About Providence?
Yeah.
Because you left that message on my answering machine tape.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was like, you know, I was with you guys, and we blew a little mota, and then like we went to the music store, and like I actually, you know, the band gave me a little money, like $40, to buy some stuff. You know, we didn't have much cash. You know, the dinero was slight,
oh,
and.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, I know. And then I left it. We were hanging out before you guys left up near Times Square somewhere. And then I realized I didn't have the bag anymore. And I was like, oh, man, maybe I left it in the van. But it wasn't in the van. And you were like, you left it near the punk phone booth.
No, what happened was the next day we're playing Providence, and I realized that when I asked you to dump some trash,
oh yeah,
you had
that's
the
right.
bag in your arm, and you dumped everything in the trash.
I once sort of bought like some stuff at a music store, and it was a lot of stuff, and it was really expensive, and it was in this bag, and I was waiting for a bus, and then I got home, and then I realized I didn't have it anymore, and I realized I think it was at the bus stop. Like, I left it at the bus stop. Right? And this was, like, about 12 hours later. And then I hoofed it all the way back to the bus stop, and the bag was just sort of, like, sitting there.
Yeah.
Like trash, you know, like middle of New York.
But what made you want to make a song out of that? And then a video.
Yeah, because to me it's like, you know, one thing about, I always thought, what I wanted to do in Sonic Youth was sort of like really kind of put forth the idea that a song can be whatever you make it, you know? And it's sort of like that whole dictum that is like on those stickers with D. Boone where it says punk rock is whatever we wanted it to be, you know? To me, it's like that was like punk rock. That was like, you know, a song can be whatever you make it, and if it sort of has a certain vibe that you feels right. And that's how I got in later on when I started getting into like the whole genre of improvised music. I was like, well, you know, these are people who are doing composition and they're like really spontaneous composition, you know. And these are as much value as a composed song. So I don't know. I just sort of thought like Providence really worked because I thought like, well, okay, your answering machine message was like you were the vocalist. You were like the lead vocalist on this song. This is your recitation, you know. And then we, and this like
the lyricist,
the the increased tape hiss that we brought out from the tape was an element of music that would go with it. And then we actually sort of added some piano to it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's like we just created this piece of music that I thought was like this song. And we actually, I wanted, at the time, you know, the record was on Blast First, and I tried to get the label, who was Paul Smith. I wanted to release it as a 7-inch off the record, and I was like, I want Providence to be a 7-inch, you know. And I thought that I wanted to take it even further, where it would be sort of a reggae 7-inch with a big hole, and just sort of like, you know, this is the 7-inch from the record. It's Providence, and of course they couldn't execute that idea at all in a way that was right. So they made this kind of promo little hole 7-inch with, you know, just like, no. Just like, you get it, dudes.
The aesthetic's anyway. So hard to get over to Square Jones sometimes.
And then we made a video. Yeah, we made a video for it. Because these guys had some video. I mean, we were doing some stuff with these British guys who were doing some stuff at the time. And it's like, you know, what songs off the record should we do a video for? And I was like, well, Providence. That's a good vid, too.
I get asked about that tune so many times.
Thirst. Find your shit. I have people yelling at me at gigs sometimes. Thirst! Find your shit! You know? It's like being in Japan, you know, when nobody says anything after they clap. It's sort of dead silence. It could be like one American dude in the audience. Hey, what do you think of these people? If you don't understand what you're saying, you know. I hate that. Some gaijin in the audience. Trying to sort of bond with you because you both speak English. And you know, hey, why don't you tell them about, you know, the one lone voice of some dude who's there in town.
What's your favorite song right at this moment?
My favorite song right at this moment? My favorite song right at this moment? My favorite song is, City Slang by Sonic's Rendezvous Band.
Did you get that CD I sent?
Thanks for that CD. It's great. Yeah, I've been playing that jammer.
True.
Yeah, I play it in the kitchen. It's good. I love that stuff. Okinawa, man. Radical Okinawa music.
Okay, Thurs.
All right, man.
It's the end of the first hour of the February 14th, 2007 edition of Lot from Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour two. February 14th, 2007. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. Seeing we just had Thurston Spiel there, the first hour. I saw fit to have us listen to a live prac thing of theirs, Sonic Youth, getting a tune together. I don't know if this ever became a real one, but whatever, it's interesting. As is talking with Thurst. I've known him so many years now, and every time is in enlightenment time for Watt when I sit in his classroom, which means his rap, you know, spiel. People like him, Nels, Raymond Pettibone. I'm a lucky guy, man. Righteous cats come into my world and very generous with me. And, yeah, not a lot of spiel this show, because, I ain't got Brother Matt around, and you probably can imagine I could get a one-way conversation going pretty easy, but the reality of it is, a lot of times it's, well, it's going on, but it's more internal, and not so, open there with the mic. But enough blather. Here's Sonic Youth. Okay, now this is Chinese, so forgive me for probably fucking up the pronunciation, but that tune was Qing Mei Zhuma by Wu Fei. And before that, we had Dreamfinger by Sonic Youth. Yeah, some longish tunes, huh? Just shows you all over the world you can wail it out. The Minutemen was one extreme of doing things. Other folks like to unravel things, maybe not compact it so much. We use a lot of shorthand, just the way it is in Pedro, you know, we like to breathe. My next opera is all a bunch of little tunes with Tom and Raoul, Missing Man. And I got up to some kind of longish tunes with the last opera, the middle stand sickness thing. But yeah, it was a trip. I just thought, you know that the aphorism, you know, live in the moment. Well, sickness, man, that's all you got is the moment. So, like another aphorism you've probably heard, be careful for what you wish for. Not the sickness, but living in the moment. Although that is a great thought. It's probably Buddha came up with it first, huh? Yeah, I got some music here from some San Diego cats. Truckee Brothers, Hot from Pedro Show.
Yeah.
We started that chunk of music out with Truckee Brothers. Purple Waves of Grain. No. Purple. Sorry. Purple Waves of Gain. It's maybe a play on that line in that song. Or is that Amber Waves of Grain? I don't know. Anyway, they're great cats. I met them in London. I was on tour with Paul and Raoul, Second Men. Yeah. Here's some guys I met from the same tour. Next, an Irish band called Estelle. With, now this ain't me fucking up the pronunciation. This is the way they spelled it, okay? Uraka Discipline. You know, shit, I do. But I'm trying to get it together, okay? And, from their new album. Yeah, the organ player makes these intense paintings. Always a lot of blood and violent. Maybe it's a metaphor. Maybe. But yeah, I asked the drummy Bushy, "Hey, what about some flannel paintings?" and then we played, me, myself, and I, played Love is Laughter. Band, God, where, there's a cat named Sam. I met him through Jay Maskus when I was touring with Jay Maskus in the Fog, 2000. And they were in Seattle then, him and a cat named Zach. It was a two-man band. And they were great, man. Very nice people. And, yeah, I like the tunes. And that was called On the Run. Tomorrow I'm going to record Long Beach, a lady named Vicky Calhoun. She asked me to write her a tune. Here we go. So, another pants shitter situation for what? And then Sunday I record again. With Nels, Petra, Money Mark, Chad Smith. We're doing maybe I talked about this last show, but with Brother Matt. A song Richard Meltzer did the words for. Richard Meltzer, a huge hero for me. He just wrote me, told me he's finishing a novel. I can't wait to read it. I love his writing. Everybody should read A Whore Just Like the Rest. It's the best if you want to know about shildom and the industry and just good writing. And oh, the humanity. I don't know how to put it in words. That's why Richard's a writer, you know. He can sling the words. In fact, I've got a project with him called Spielgusher where he recorded me a bunch of little spiels and put music behind it. What an honor. Righteous. Last thing me, D. Boone, and Georgie were going to do was record with Richard. He wrote us 10 songs. And some of those are part of this batch. I also go to San Francisco and play with Kira for a Dose gig. We had practice today and man, those songs are hard for what? But it's good. Hard is good for what, okay? People, sometimes people read my diaries and they tell me I'm too hard on. Man, don't worry. Okay, a little hand wringing's good if it's going to make you act on. Well, I'm speaking to myself, for myself, but if I can, you know, try and get it together, then it's okay. If I wring my hands in public a little bit there, you know, with them diaries, I'm trying to practice writing, even, you know? I'm a stumble bum motherfucker. A lot of ways. You know, I gotta try. Yeah, very grateful for the niceness people do give me. It's out of concern, probably, people say that, but it's okay, you know. What do you call it? Therapy. You know what I'm reading? If you want to read a real crazy go-off thing, and it doesn't matter whether you agree or not, you can't even tell if he did, but this guy, Soren Kierkegaard, read Fear and Trembling. That is a whack fucking tome. It's only 152 pages, but... Man, it's a roller coaster. What I'm doing is a lot nowadays is rereading stuff I read in my 20s, and teens even, late teens, because it's different. I mean, obviously the words stay the same. I changed, and it's a trip to go back. Just because you read something, probably like listening to something, or seeing a painting or a play, it ain't done. Go back. I mean, that's what I have to do, that I'm into doing. It's a trip, man. It's like you already did some work already, so none of it was wasted. It was wasted. Any investment in the arts, you know, if it's a real deal, I think it means something, man, and somehow, some way, it's hard to get a handle on that even, you know, but all the collisions and the tangent and connects and all that, it's just too big to reduce it down to, you know, whatever pablum seems gummable. Go for the big chomps. Savor. Okay, here's Saccharine Truss, some old friends from Wilmington.
No kinder soul did I ever know, or would have sought to trouble had I somewhere else to go. Your charity to me. You are blessed with charity. Trustful friend! When I'm in need again, self-sufficient working mentor, as sweet as a word, please. No kind of soul did I ever know would have sought to trouble had I somewhere else to go. Your charity to me. You are blessed with charity. Trustful friend. Working mentor, as sweet as a word, please. The streets are rugged, tone me back to you again. I have nothing have I lost, but my pride, and now that is yours. Set me on your couch, so warm and soft, I tell you. My feet will stand again when they can or must. Till then, could you open up a can of beans and a nice cold beer? Oh, but the world is cold too. Buddy, I'll drink to you and your warm heart that houses me. Protect you from anybody but the police. Yeah, I'll do anything to you. Wait, no, I mean, I'll do anything for you, not anything to you. Hey, don't go bringing up the past. No,
unless it's for laughs. Hey, didn't I ever teach you not to hold grudges? Cause remember, I told you, you know, come on, man. I was on a different plateau. You're just too decent, you would never know. I was on a different plateau. It's like some bad men from down south were trying to take me out. What they say I owe them, and I know you're most forgiving. Hey, I was on a different plateau. You would never understand. It's like this, you always said yes. You just give and give, you never ask. And would you have caught on any other way? Man, these streets are for rodents. I owe them. Hey, like I said, I was on a different plateau, man, when I stole your collectibles. Hey, I'll pay you back, my friend, before you stop aging. Yeah, you'll never trust me the same. I know, but you will trust me again.
Regarding the nature of conceptual reality. Psychologically speaking, the human mind, or brain, or whatever, is almost incapable of distinguishing between the real and the vividly imagined experience, sound and film, music and radio. Even these manipulated experiences are received more or less directly and uninterpreted by the mind. They are cataloged and recorded and either acted upon directly or stored in the memory or both. Now, this process, unless we pay it tremendous attention, begins to separate us from the reality of the now. Am I being clear? For we must allow the reality of the now just happen as it happens. Observe and act with clarity. For where there is clarity, there is no choice. And where there is choice, there is misery. But then, why should I speak, since I know nothing?
We were speaking of belief. Beliefs and conditioning. All belief possibly could be said to be the result of some conditioning. Thus, the study of history is simply the study of one system of beliefs decomposing another, and so on and so on and so on. A psychologically tested belief of our time is that the central nervous system, which feeds its impulses directly to the brain, the conscious and subconscious, is unable to discern between the real and the vividly imagined experience. If there is a difference, and most of us believe there is, am I being clear? For to examine these concepts requires tremendous energy and discipline. To allow the unknown to occur and to occur requires clarity. And where there is clarity, there is no choice. And where there is choice, there is misery. But then why should anyone listen to me? Or should I speak? Since I know nothing. That's the most strange.
Now, This is the moment in which we can do.
Saccharine Trust starts off there with Reggie's Plateau, then it was Buddha Machine by Howard Amb, and then Lioness by The Wagon. It's the end of the second hour of the February 14, 2007 edition of the Watt from Pedro Show. Hang tight for hour three. February 14, 2007, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. And here's part five of Jack Flanders in the Ghost Islands.
I was talking to Fast Freddy. He told me that Bunny had said something about hearing singing out there beyond the harbor.
Oh, great.
You think that's where she's gone?
Who knows?
Well, if the reason Claudine wanted to come here has got to do with those Ghost Islands, then I think we need her help.
Look, Claudine won't tell me anything. You know, I wish I knew what the singing sounded like.
Well, if you hear it, you'll know.
If we could recreate it and put speakers out there, and maybe Skinny might think she's being called. And then she'd go out and then...
Oh, man, you are bad. Does Claudine know how bad you are?
When it comes to Dominique? Yes.
I like Dominique. She's a free spirit. A little nutty, but life's never boring around her.
Yeah, don't remind me.
So, what are we going to do about Bunny?
Huh? Pray she's okay. Pray that the islands will reappear.
Seems to me there's a lot of coming and going, and we're just sitting and watching.
Watching and waiting and ready to go, right?
I think we need to find something to do in the meantime.
Well, if Dominique is going to be traveling with us, well, let's find out if she can swim.
What are you going to do, push her off the dock?
Oh, no, Joe, I'm shocked.
Oh, yeah?
I'm shocked that you can actually read my mind.
Oh, man, you're too much.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, you're not.
Claudine?
Yes, Jack?
You know, I think it's time we talk about what we're doing here.
Do you mean what I'm doing here?
No. I'm not questioning your mission, whatever that is. But I am questioning your lack of concern over Bunny's disappearance.
I don't think you need to worry.
We're responsible for her. She's a teenager. And teenagers are notoriously irresponsible.
Do you think this is true of Bunny?
Well, you know her father. Now, if anything happens...
Jack, no, stop this now.
But you are so blasé about it.
I feel she is safe.
You mean being looked after by your fuzzy friends, whatever they are?
Talk to Dominique.
Dominique?
She makes you smile.
Claudine, there are times you can be so piddles.
See, are you not smiling?
I am not.
I see a thin little smile.
What you are seeing is an upside-down frown.
Jack, don't worry. Let's be happy, okay?
Okay.
Good.
So, Bunny is all right?
I don't know. C'est tombé temps possible. Do what you want. I don't care. I give up. Oh, tant pis alors.
I have talked to Claudine. She doesn't know where Bunny has gone, but she feels Bunny is safe.
I know. She told me.
Bunny's been gone off a lot by herself.
She is a young woman. Young women do things you men can never understand.
That's for sure.
And you, Jack, you had better watch yourself.
What have I done now?
You've done nothing.
What?
Claudine needs your support. But are you giving support?
Now, wait a minute.
Don't you know what Claudine is doing is very difficult for her?
Do you actually know what she's doing?
No, but obviously it is not easy.
Dominique's got a point.
It's not easy to help someone who doesn't want
your
help.
Did I say help? No, I said support. You don't know the difference?
Hey, cool it. Okay?
Yeah. Besides, we weren't being serious.
Oh, no?
Let's go get a beer.
You're buying?
Yeah. Fatten you up.
How about the Pelican's Pelt?
Good. Come on. Get up. Let's go. Hop, Jack. Hop. Oh,
God.
We found Rose sitting alone at the Pelican's Pouch. I had a few more questions to ask her.
The appearance of the islands was seen as a blessing.
Why?
Well, they seemed to set things in balance.
Were things out of balance?
Are they ever in balance?
But how did their presence bestow a blessing?
Jack, it's like an old friend. When they come to visit you, is that not a blessing?
And the islands may absorb the negative energies, too.
So what is happening?
They are weakening.
They are disappearing?
Only one island has appeared this year, and I haven't seen the others.
What is causing this? Is it the weather, the warming, the pollution, the craziness?
Maybe just too much negativity in this world.
Claudine knows.
You think so?
I think that's what she does.
Does what?
Troubleshoot.
What do you mean by troubleshoot?
She sees trouble, she shoots it?
Claudine can see the other side.
What other side are you talking about?
The other side of reality.
So this is why you have come here?
I guess so.
But aren't you the captain?
Yes, I am.
And you don't know? Well, why is that funny?
I have no idea. Rose, what can you tell us about the fuzzy ones?
Is that what you call them?
It was Bunny who came up with that.
Oh, did you find Bunny?
No. She's still missing.
Who are the fuzzies? Oh, they inhabit the island.
Yeah, but who are they really?
They're not like us.
Are they human?
They are, but not like we are.
You've seen them?
I have. At their brightest, they are like a luminous cocoon, but that is rare. And if you see them here, they are, as you say, like a faint floating oval.
I was attacked by one.
No.
Oh, man, that was in a dream you had.
I don't care. They were carrying me away.
Maybe they were planning a fuzzy barbecue.
That is not funny.
Rose, what do the fuzzies do?
Well, there are those who believe that they are here to bless us. And that's why in the village you've seen the little altars and offerings.
Mm.
How do they bless you?
With barbecue sauce.
Fred, that was not funny.
Well, how do any gods help humans? They do it by removing negative energies and replacing it with positive energies. Who knows?
Or they may just bless.
Yes, they may just bless.
Why do they do this?
No one knows. But all of this is changing, and the islands are vanishing. And as I told Jack before, this year only one island has appeared.
What do you think is happening?
I don't know.
Does that mean there's fewer fuzzies walking around?
Yes, and this may be the last year they'll appear.
That was part 5 of Jack Flanders and the Ghost Islands. Oh, Jack. Going through all the trips as we follow him. Oh, man. Years now, huh? Maybe, yeah, more than 30. 35, maybe. Still trying to figure it out, like me. He's got a better handle on him than I do, though. Anyway, coming up next now is a new thing for the Watt from Pedro show. You know, a lot of stuff you hear is what either cats give me or stuff from my old collection or just things I stumble onto. And here's a way to get out of my world. I mean, I have a lot of help from people like Brother Matt and his wide scope, and as you could tell with Thurston, his deep knowledge when I have guests on. But last week, a colleague of mine in England, London specifically, Kaord Shida, she made 42 minutes worth of radio segment. That's pretty intense, pretty amazing. And so, check it out. Kaori in England.
Hello, this is Kaori from the Go Team. Thanks for letting me be in the part of What from Pedro show. Mike Watt says Pedro, but we say Pedro in England. Hope you understand my Japanese and English accent. Let me introduce myself first in case you don't know me. But I think a lot of people don't know me anyway. I'm from Japan and living in London for 6 years now. And I play mainly guitar and bits and pieces in a band called The Go Team in England. And hopefully some of you guys saw us playing somewhere in the world, because we've been on tour all over the world last year. And I met Mike Watt, Mr. Mike Watt, when we played at the same festival, in a summer festival. And he's a cool dude, as you know, and we got on well, and he asked me to do that. And I'm so glad to be able to do this, but this is a fast radio show for me, so I'm quite nervous. But I'm going to play whatever I want to play. That's Mr. Mike Watt told me that. So enjoy! First track I play is Go Team Junior Kickstart.
Thank you.
it was the Go theme, Junior Kickstart. And next one I want to play is The Head Coaties. This is a project of the guy called Billy Childish. He's a proper English guy with a moustache, and he's been doing a lot of projects like last 20 years. And this is one of his projects, quite old project, and four girls singing in front, and one lady from this The Head Coaties, name called Holly. She's been producing the White Stripes album recently. Then she got famous with it, but she was in this band, and I love this band. This is main influence for my music, and I'm so glad I found this record in my hometown. And this song called Cara Lynn. This is actually my friend, band called Panic Smile. They are from south of Japan, next to my hometown. And I think I was 15 or 16 years old. I just started the guitar, to play the guitar. Then I was into Guns N' Roses and stuff like wrong music. I can't say wrong, nothing wrong with it. But just mainstream, kids got mainstream, like Guns N' Roses, like at the time, hard rock. So, and they came down to play in my hometown. I was there, I was shocked, like their like experimental noise band. And that was the first time to see experimental band in my life, ever. So I was so excited about it, and I got into them and became a friend of them. They were really nice to me, and they told me what is the real music, that kind of stuff. Then they told me a lot of cool stuff, so they saved me from Guns N' Roses. I'm glad I met them. So this band called Panic Smile and song called MMM. was Panic Smile, MMM. Ah, that's great. And next one is a band called Butter OA. This is quite old project. And the girls from Chibomato, Miho Hattori and Yuka Honda, they are in this band. And I picked up this CD in my hometown, like 1996. Then I was like, whoa, how cool is that? I already loved the Chibomato at that time. And I was dreaming to go to England to play music. And Chibomato were already in New York and playing and releasing records. So Chibomato inspired me so much to come over to England and play music. Thank you very much, Chibomato. I love you guys. This song called Thick Serious. Butter or 8, Dick Serious. And next one is a band called Kozi in English pronunciation, Japanese pronunciation, Koshi. And American, someone told me that but forgot it. And Q-U-A-S-I, Kozi. And song called I Never Wanna See You Again. Was Cozy, I Never Wanna See Again. And next one is from Domino Record, the band called Fortet, song called A Joy. Hard. And next one is the guy called Robert, I Am Robert and Proud, song called Grey Stays. Relax. I am Robot and Proud, Grey Space. And next one is I play is a CD, but listen to this.
3. Money.
Holiday. Let's save our money and buy a new car next year. The drinks in this vending machine each cost 75 cents. Nowadays, few people pick up a penny if they see one on the street.
Yeah, I pick up the penny on the street. And this is a English lesson CD. I think someone left it in my flat. So it's not mine, but I can make it as a Japanese lesson, I thought. It's not even lesson, just hear the sound. I follow that in Japanese. Okay?
40. Unusual.
Indian food is made with many unusual ingredients.
インド料理はたくさんの珍しい食材から作られています。
There was a strange smell coming from the factory.
工場から変な匂いがしてました。
The professor wears a lot of weird neckties.
教授はいつも変なネクタイばっかりしてる。
Mr. Gibbons is a rather odd old man.
ギビンズさんは超変なおっさん。Okay, that's it. How was it? And so, what kind of English lesson was that? Like, old man. It's like pretty funny to me. Yeah, it was. And next, this is a scientist from Jamaica. Dub from Ghetto, that's a CD. And a song called Young Lover.
We'll be right back.
that nice dub, Scientist. And thanks for listening for my radio show. And this is a main music I wanted to play on this show. And I'm really into Japanese traditional music at the moment. But there is a place called Okinawa in Japan, southeast island of Japan. And really small, but they have their own culture and own instruments. And they have a shamisen, but it's made by snakeskin. It's different than normal Japanese shamisen. Shamisen is Japanese banjo. And they have own music as well. It's mixed with a Japanese and bit of Indian and bit of Asia, stuff like that. And really beautiful, and I'm really in love with it. And I've got the shamisen, Okinawa shamisen, called Sanshin. I bought it when I was in Japan. Then it sounds wicked. It's lovely. I love it. And I'm gonna play these two songs from Okinawa. One of them, first one, Rankbush. Second one, Kiteku. And artist is Minoru Kinjo. It was Okinawa traditional music, and I hope I can play like them very soon. And I appreciate your any feedback, like complain or anything. So I've got the MySpace, which is myspace.com/Kaori505, K-A-O-R-I 505. So if you can give me email or something, I appreciate anything. Thank you very much. So thanks for my quote again, and see you very soon. Bye.
Kaori in England. Wow. You know, in May it'll be 6 years for the Watt from Pedro show. And 2 years before that, I did a show at KBLT, that pirate station up Silver Lake. So 8 years, and I still am trying very much to get together. It's very obvious she's head and shoulders over my weak ass shit. So look to her for inspiration. Try harder. She was saying, you know, you have any thoughts, any feedback, write her at my waste of space place, myspace.com/Kaori505, K-A-O-R-I-505. And, yeah. Tell her what you think. I thought it was righteous. Much respect. Here's some Kyoko.
Matter you make a at the shield. trains by the veins, we'll be captain. Gotta stop this shit, you should see the size of me. Tea, skin, milk, cereal, piece of fruit. See if I can get my ass in my sonic wedding suit.
That was Tonic Wedding Suit by Position Normal. And in front of that was The Person I Meet by Kyoko. Happy Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2007, edition Watt from Pedro Show. Coming to the end there. Without Brother Matt, by myself and my Pedro pad. But very grateful for assistance with that spiel with Thurston. And then the KRE in England segment. And plus all the bands, all the folks making music that I find interesting. And hopefully some of you cats out there do too. Next week with Brother Matt again. And I got a lot of music coming up. I always got a lot of music coming up, huh? I'm very lucky. Watt is a lucky man. You sure as hell got that right. Damn straight. Keep your powder dry.